Easter is all about awe. Easter is all about awe. Merriam-Webster defines awe as an emotion variously combining veneration and wonder that is inspired by authority or by the sacred. Easter is all about awe. Awe is that strong feeling of both fear and respect combined with wonder. It's that strong feeling of fear and respect combined with wonder that you experience maybe when you meet someone really important, maybe somebody famous, one of your heroes. I had this experience of awe that Easter is all about once when I was in college. Now, back when I was in college, when I had muscles and no neck, I was a gymnast. And one of the greatest gifts that a lifetime of gymnastics gave me was that I had the privilege of meeting the President of the United States once. When I was a senior in college, my entire gymnastics team from Penn State, we went to the White House, and because I was the captain of the team that year, I actually had the privilege of meeting the president and having like a couple-minute conversation with him. It's one of the most incredible moments of my life. And I remember very distinctly feeling two things when I met the president. And we'll just say the president, it doesn't matter which one it was. You know, I know we're in an election year here. But, you know, it was the president. It doesn't matter which one it is. It's incredible. At least it was to me. And I remember two things. The first one was, my goodness, this guy is tall. I mean, like, when I had seen him on TV, he just looked like a normal dude. But, you know, I guess gymnast, 5'5", I was like, huh, a normal-sized human. You're huge. But then the second thing I remember was this feeling of awe. All at one time, I was both exhilarated and terrified. All at one time, I was both ecstatic and sort of dreaded any word that might come out of my mouth. You know, and he starts asking me, like, what my plans are for after college, as though I'd asked him if I could marry his daughter or something. And I'm like, I hope to live beyond this conversation. And it was just, I was, every word was totally guarded. I was in awe. And that was just a sliver, just a taste of the awe that Easter is all about. See, awe is what breaks in on Mary and Mary in Mark chapter 16 when they discover to their great surprise that Jesus is no longer dead, that he's risen. Look at their response. Mark 16, the very last verse, verse 8, says, "And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them." That is awe. "And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." They were in awe. See, according to the Gospel of Mark, the big idea when it comes to Easter is this: Jesus is risen. So stand in awe. Jesus is risen. Stand in awe of him. But I think the next question that comes, after we see their response, how they're filled with both trembling and astonishment, they're filled with awe, I think the logical question is, why? Why are they filled with awe? What is it about what's going on here that fills them with such awe? I mean, I don't know about you, but this is not my first Easter service. They don't, by the way, if you're new to Christianity, they don't let you come up front if it's your first time. This is not my first Easter service. And I know for me, it can be so easy on Easter to go through the motions. Right? It's like, I got the bow tie once a year. Here we go. There's even flowers on it. And, you know, you're just all jazzed up. But, you know, it's just, you go through the motions. Many of you, you got flowers on your clothes too. But it's like, awe. Awe is like the last thing I feel. I'm just ready for that Easter lunch. Why awe? I know for some of you, you may be totally new to church and to Christianity. Kind of checking this whole thing out, you're like, eh, nice band, interesting bow tie, but why awe? Why awe? That's the question I want to answer in just our next 20 minutes together. Jesus is risen, stand in awe, why? And in Mark chapter 16, the passage that you just heard read, we're going to see three reasons why Mary and Mary were filled with awe at the resurrection and why you and I should be too. So let's get into it. The very first reason why they are filled with awe and we ought to be too is because of the expectation of it. The expectation. The first reason why we should stand in awe at the resurrection is because it's so unexpected. Mary and Mary stand in awe at the resurrection because they never expected it. Do you notice what they're doing in verses 1 to 3? They have burial spices. They saw where Jesus was laid in the tomb by Joseph of Arimathea, and apparently they noticed that he was not anointed with burial spices, which would mean this is going to smell absolutely awful. And so they buy these expensive spices and they go to the tomb. Why? Because they never expected him to rise. They expected to find nothing but a corpse. See, Mary and Mary remind us that resurrections from the dead were just as unbelievable then as they are now. They expected to find nothing but a corpse. The resurrection was totally unexpected, but here's the interesting thing. They should have expected it. We've been on a journey working through Mark's gospel for the last couple months, and if you've been part of it, you know that three times during Mark's gospel, Jesus predicts his own death. And every time, along with the death prediction, comes what? In 3 days, I'll rise. In 3 days, I'll rise. In 3 days, I'll rise. They heard it, but they didn't expect it. They had doubts. Like you and like me, they had doubts. They never expected Jesus to rise. This is great news for those of us who have doubts, because we learn from Mary and Mary that apparently doubt is the soil from which awe can spring up. They never expected it. They had doubts, and yet, because they were willing to take a second look at that tomb, because they were willing to doubt their doubts. And by the way that you doubt your doubts, whether you're here and you're like, I kind of doubt if God exists. I kind of doubt if this whole Jesus thing is real. I kind of doubt that Jesus is for me and loves me. The way you doubt your doubts is by taking a second look at that empty tomb. Something we should do every day. And ask yourself, what does that mean that that tomb is empty? We'll get into that. But the first reason that these women are in awe at the resurrection, the first reason we should be at awe at the resurrection, is because no one in their right mind expects it. It's totally unexpected. But that brings us to the second reason why these women are totally in awe at the resurrection. It's the surprise of it. The surprise of it. You see, awe comes upon these women because they absolutely never expected Jesus to rise, but then they arrive at this empty tomb, and to their surprise, they learn, they realize that Jesus is risen. Notice their response. Verses 4 to 7, notice the surprise of it. And looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled back. It was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe. Just so you know, I'm sure you've seen the movies, but it's not as though everyone in the ancient Near East just walked around wearing white robes. Okay, these are dusty robes. This would be a bad idea for your fashion. White robes in the Bible signal this is a messenger of the Lord. This is an angel. Something really extravagant is going on. They saw a young man sitting on the right side dressed in a white robe, and they were alarmed. And he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who is crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go and tell his disciples and Peter." Notice he says Peter. Peter had just denied him. Jesus doesn't rise to condemn us. "He's going before you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." See, awe and wonder, joyous amazement comes when those of us who never expected it are surprised, when we come face to face with the reality that we can doubt our doubts, and two, embrace the surprise that Jesus really is risen. I actually think there are a couple very good reasons given to us by Mark in these verses why actually we can be intellectually justified in doubting our doubts and embracing the surprise that this really happened, that Jesus really did die and rise again, that it's not just wishful thinking, that it's not just like, "Oh, I hope it's true, therefore I'll bank my life on it." I think there are good reasons to actually believe it, and these verses give us just two of them. One reason why you can doubt your doubts and embrace the surprise that Jesus really did rise is because of the women. It's because of the women. Note that Mark very specifically tells us that it was two women who were the first to come to and witness the empty tomb and the resurrection of Christ. Mark would have never written it that way if he was trying to convince people of something that didn't happen. And I'll tell you why. In the ancient Near East in Jesus' day, much like, in sadly, in many parts of our world and even in our culture today, women were marginalized. And in that day, their testimony was inadmissible in court. They weren't seen to be reliable witnesses. Therefore, if you're trying to convince people that Jesus rose from the dead, the last thing you would write if you were making it up was, "I swear the tomb was empty, and you know who told us? Two women by themselves with no one to verify it." You'd never make it up that way. The only logical explanation for Mark having written it this way is that it actually happened. But there's more. The second reason why I think you can doubt your doubts and embrace the surprise of the resurrection is the other eyewitnesses. See, you could look at this and say, okay, two women, they saw the resurrected Jesus, but, you know, it's a hallucination. For two people, that's not that much to conjure up. But over the next 40 days, Jesus appeared to over 500 people. You notice that Mark very specifically tells us the names of these women. You don't write footnotes in fiction. He's saying, corroborate my story. Go talk to them. And then these 500, the Apostle Paul writes about them in 1 Corinthians 15, one of the earliest letters in the New Testament. And he says that Jesus appeared to over 500, and most of them are still alive. Go talk to them. You can corroborate my story. It's the eyewitnesses give us every reason to doubt our doubts and embrace the surprise of the resurrection. Actually, even more convincing than that to me is what happened to the eyewitnesses. If you were here on Good Friday, you remember what Jesus' disciples, his apostles, did in his time of greatest need. Remember when Judas betrayed Jesus with a kiss after Peter got a little overzealous and chopped the dude's ear off? Notice what they do next. They get overcome with fear, and they all run. They don't even want to be associated with Jesus. They are so terrified of punishment and death. Peter, Jesus' best friend, denies that he's even heard of Jesus to a little servant girl. These were not the bravest of men. But then something happened after this Sunday morning, where suddenly these terrified, very weak, very cowardly men were willing not to be scattered in terror, but to scatter all over the known world to preach about Jesus. And the vast majority of them lost their lives because they refused to compromise their faith in Christ. They were martyrs. Now, if the resurrection was a hoax, every skeptic would agree that the perpetrator of the hoax would have been the disciples. Let me ask you, how far would you be willing to go for a hoax that you yourself made up? How far would you be willing to go? Now, you may be thinking, well, people get rich and famous off religion all the time. Maybe I'd be willing to go really far with it. And you're right, people do abuse a religion for absolutely awful purposes. But these guys did not get famous in their time. They certainly did not get rich. They lost everything to follow Jesus. I got to tell you, you know when I'd give up on the hoax? They're about to toss me maybe into a coliseum full of lions. Maybe when they are mocking me and saying, oh, you don't want to recant Jesus, then you can die like he did. And they're about to drive 6-inch spikes into my wrists and fasten me to a cross. At that point, I'd be like, okay. It was going well, but I totally made it up. I mean, wouldn't you? You going to die for a practical joke? See, the only logical explanation for the birth and explosive growth of the New Testament church is that the tomb really was empty and they really saw Jesus resurrected. Though he was dead, now he's alive. You see, you have every reason, despite the fact that we would never expect it, to doubt your doubts and embrace the surprise that Jesus really did rise from the dead. Just let that sink in for a moment. He really rose from the dead. It actually happened. I don't think we can repeat that to our own hearts enough. It really happened. He's really alive. Despite that we would never expect it, we can stand in awe because of the surprise that Jesus really is alive. And that brings us then to the last reason, the final reason why we can stand in joyous awe at the resurrection, and that is the power of it. We would have never expected it. The greatest surprise in the universe is that it happened. The grave couldn't hold him. Oh, but the last reason we should stand in that sort of veneration, that ecstatic sort of respect filled with wonder, that awe, is because of the power of it. The power of it. Do you remember what we read in chapter 16, verse 8, how Mary and Mary responded emotionally to seeing that Jesus had risen? Said that they were astonished, filled with wonder, and they were afraid. Now, that was not negative fear. That was awe. It's the same awe that the disciples, Jesus' followers, experienced a few chapters earlier in Mark chapter 4. You may remember it's the story of Jesus calming the storm. You guys remember this story? Jesus is absolutely exhausted from a whole day of preaching. Believe it or not, this does get tiring. And so Jesus says, can we just go for a little boat ride? I love that. Jesus wants to go for a boat ride because he's tired. Okay, great. So the disciples take him out onto the boat, and Jesus, the Son of God, this is how you know it's spiritual, takes a nap. Okay, so if today you're feeling weary and you're like, man, taking a nap is so selfish. Maybe not. Jesus just takes a nap. Okay, so they get him out in the boat. Jesus is taking a nap. And an absolutely horrendous storm kicks up. It's actually pretty commonplace on the Sea of Galilee. See, the Sea of Galilee is actually just a massive lake that sits below sea level. And it's very close to an extremely high mountain. And so those of you who are into weather, you know, what do you get when you mix cold air from a really high mountain peak and warm air from a very low body of water? You get incredible storms. And apparently this one was something astonishing because Jesus' disciples, who are lifelong professional fishermen, think that they are moments from death. They think they're done. Water's filling the boat. They're going under. And at that moment, they remember, Jesus is in this boat. Jesus is asleep. This is actually just like me when I'm going through trials. It's like, the storms are coming. I feel like life is sinking. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Oh yeah, Jesus is in the boat. Maybe I should go wake him up. So they go and they wake Jesus up and they say to him, don't you care that we're perishing? You got to love that. Don't you care that we're perishing? He's about to perish for them. He's about to die for them, and they know it. Don't you care that we're perishing? It's like that child that you've spent years staying up at night taking care of, and then they become a teenager. It's like, you've never loved me. You're like, I haven't slept in 15 years. I love you. He's like, Jesus, don't you care that we're sinking? This is what I love. Jesus gets up from his nap, and he doesn't say a word to them. He looks at the wind and the waves, as much as you can look at wind, and he rebukes it. He says, silent, be still. Water is glass. And Mark tells us that the disciples, after Jesus had stilled the storm, were greatly afraid. Literally in the Greek, it says they feared a great fear. And I remember reading that going, well, why are they afraid? Storm's been calmed. What's the deal? I understand they were terrified before when the storm's going and they forgot that Jesus was in the boat. But why are they so terrified now? And Mark tells us that they were actually afraid, in awe of Jesus. See, the thing that they thought was most powerful, that terrified them most, the storm, had just been silenced like that with a word from Jesus. And so they're not thinking about the storm at all anymore. They're looking at Jesus going, who in the world is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? What they once thought was terrifying, they're no longer afraid of because they're filled with a greater awe of Jesus. See, only awe can drive out fear from our hearts. That's the exact same thing happening here at the tomb. These women who, like all of us, their greatest fear was death. I don't know what you're afraid of. What are you afraid of? You don't have to shout it out, but you know, maybe you're afraid of spiders. Maybe you're afraid of people speaking ill of you at work. Maybe you're afraid of always being alone. Maybe you're afraid that now you're no longer alone. It's not always cracked up to be. And what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Behind every fear is the fear of death. The fear behind every fear is the fear of death. And these women stand in awe because the most powerful, most frightening thing imaginable, death, has just been overcome by someone who's apparently more powerful than death. Jesus, the Son of God. That's the power of the resurrection. You see, the Bible from cover to cover tells us that the consequence of sin is death. Eternal death, not just physical death, but spiritual death forever. That's the consequence of sin. And it's a consequence, it's a death penalty that we all carry by birth and by choice. But God, instead of sending judgment upon us, sent his son to live the life we should have lived, a holy life, to die the death we deserve to die, a sinner's death. He died in our place for our sins, the righteous one for us, the unrighteous. But that wasn't the end of the story. Then he rose from the dead. You see, a prisoner never goes free until they have served and fulfilled their penalty. When Jesus walked free out of that tomb, he stamped "paid in full" over every sin of every person for all time, for anyone who would believe in him. Paid in full. The most powerful thing imaginable, eternal death, swallowed up in the death and resurrection of Christ. Death died in the death of Christ. What would have taken you and I an eternity in hell to pay for, Jesus paid for on the cross, in our place. And he rose from the dead. And in John chapter 11, he promises, he says, "I am the resurrection and the life." Here's the power of the resurrection. He says, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me, though he dies, yet he will live forever." Though we would have never expected it, we have every reason to embrace the surprise and stand in awe at the power of the resurrected Christ, who says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden." Not those who have got it together, not those who have dressed themselves up, put on a bow tie, and can, you know, do a nice little religious jig. Not those who are just a little bit morally superior than others. Not those who are a little bit more intellectually astute. No, he says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, because I have taken the ultimate burden for you. The greatest and the only storm that can ultimately ever hurt you, death, I have calmed and swallowed up in my resurrection. Come to me and stand in awe." This Easter, whether this is your first time hearing it or the 1,000th time, I want you to know Jesus is risen. Stand in awe. If you've been with us for the last few months, we've been doing a sermon series working through the Gospel of Mark. This, as you could have guessed, is the last one in the series. And beginning next week, we'll spend about a month looking at prayer in the Bible. We really want to help everyone learn, how do we, in this insane pace of the 21st century life, actually connect with God in prayer? How can we have a real relationship with him? So that's coming. But if you've been around, you know that at the end of all of these sermons in Mark, I like to leave you with just a couple questions. A couple reflections for you to think about on your own, in your own time with God, maybe talk with your family about over lunch, or to talk about with your city group this week. If you're not yet a part of a city group, you can check that off on the Connect card. Jesus is risen. Stand in awe. Here's two questions as we go. First, are you embracing the surprise? Are you embracing the surprise that though you would have never expected it, despite all of our doubts, Jesus actually rose? Are you embracing the surprise of it? Are you embracing the surprise that since Jesus rose from the dead, he really is the Son of God? That everything he actually says to us in the Gospel of Mark is true. And that the only thing in the world that makes sense for us to do with our lives is follow him. To give him our sin, receive his forgiveness, and say, "Anywhere, I'm with you. You're going to rise from the grave. I'll follow you anywhere." Are you embracing the surprise? Or is it like, eh, nice Easter. Let's move on. Oh, no, never move on from this. Embrace the surprise. Second question. Are you embracing the awe of your resurrection? You see, if you've given Jesus your sin, received his forgiveness, if you're a follower of his, he promises you, like I said, that he's the resurrection and that through faith in him, you're going to rise and live forever. Are you embracing the awe that you are going to live forever? Are you living now like you are going to live forever? Are you embracing the awe of your resurrection? Does your life now make sense in light of the fact that in Jesus Christ, though you die, you will rise? You know, throughout the New Testament, whenever we read the promise that we have a future inheritance, that we're going to live forever, that we're going to have eternal life with Jesus, almost always there are two implications. Sort of two, like, well, since you're going to live forever, you ought to live like this now. The New Testament constantly tells us that if you're embracing the awe of your resurrection, it's going to make you holy and happy. Holy and happy. Holy, you got books like Colossians and Hebrews that tell you, you're going to be resurrected with Jesus, so fix your eyes on him now and run with endurance the race that's marked out for you. Just lay aside anything that might get in your way. Anything that would slow you down from running with Jesus, from knowing him, from loving him, from adoring him, from walking with him in joy. Just let it go. Throw it off. You know, summer is coming, which is one of my favorite times of the year to run, but it's spring is always that goofy time. If you're a runner, you know you always overdress. And you go out and you run in spring and you just find yourself like, oh my gosh, I've run 30 feet and now I'm completely soaked, like I've never run before or something. And so what do? Well, if you're like me and there's no one around, you're like, okay, take this long sleeve off, take the short sleeve off, now we just gotta, you're just tossing this stuff. I can't run with this. You're going to live forever. Lay aside anything that hinders your running. If you're going to live forever, the implication is holiness, but then also happiness. They're really the same thing. Happiness. You know, throughout the New Testament, whenever we're promised eternal life, you find verses like Romans chapter 8, verse 13. Where we realize that Paul says, your present suffering, my present suffering, is nothing compared to the eternal weight of glory that awaits us. What can't you face and endure with joy? I'm not talking like happy, clappy, yay, I'm suffering. No, that's just fake. It's not like your Joel Osteen smile over your worst possible circumstances. That's not what I'm talking about. No, what I'm talking about is this deep-seated joy that can't be moved because you know this is awful, but it's nothing compared to the joy that awaits me. What can't I face? Jesus is risen. Will you join me in standing in holy and happy awe of him?